WWTTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net meets weekly on 146.955, the repeater of the 2-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. That's kind enough to let us use the repeater for the purposes of this net. We meet weekly at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we have a conversation about amateur radio. Computers, telecommunications, electronics, natural phenomena that support our hobby, scientific principles that underlie what we do. Some of the fun things we do, what we've done. We just talk about it, and it's kind of neat. So, it's a little different than the normal net. You can ask questions. You can also have the joy and privilege of just raising a topic, something you've done or saw done, and you wanted to know more about or just wanted to brag about. Even if it was 50 years ago, it might be interesting for us to all know about it. The other thing we're going to introduce tonight is the notion of a swap-in shop. So if you have something that you'd like to post, indicate that as well. You don't need to hear what. We'll get to that. But right after some initial announcements by certain key individuals who have announcements almost at every net, we will then look for swap and shop items as well. Add a little fun, a little more fun to what we're doing here. Alrighty. So, without further ado, let's get cracking. We check in. Oh, one other thing. This net is accessible via Echolink, and I will also have an Echolink connection here tonight. So if the stations on Echolink that want to break in after they've checked in, it's absolutely fine. They can text it, or they can just, you know, they can, punch in like everybody else. The way to check in via Echolink is K2FoxtrotJuliet-L. K2FoxtrotJuliet-L. And, oh, by the way, the 2-meter repeater that we're on in Alpine, New Jersey, can be accessed by using a minus 600 offset and a tone of 141.3. That's a tone of 141.3. So, with no further ado, let's get on with it. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter A, let's let you go first. Please check in with your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
Connected, W2TTT.
Very good. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter whiskey.
NPR, Hector with a question.
W2CH, Ray, none of the above. Good evening.
Good evening, Hector. Good evening, Ray. Hector, I got your question. Are there any other whiskeys?
Whiskey 2, Juliet, Echo, Kilo, one comment.
Okay, Don, got it. No problem. Any other whiskeys? Okay, nothing heard. How about Kilo 2s?
Here is NKU, Maryland, in White Plains. No questions, no comments, none of the above. Good evening, Gordon.
Good evening, Maryland. Who else was there? Here, another Kilo. We'll get to the Echo Link separately, by the way, guys, so don't panic over that. Any other Kilos?
Yeah, this is K2ZO. No comments or questions at this time.
I'll pinch myself, Jim. Okay. Very good. Good to hear you. Alrighty. Any other Kilos? kilos on the Alphas. How about Novembers?
On it, and Bennett took a look at them. As I recall, one element is a third of the boom, and the other element, I don't remember if it's a forward or a rear one, is two-thirds. So the driven element is off-center on the boom that holds all the elements. Or
no, I guess it's all along is the boom itself.
Don't remember exactly.
I mean, are we talking about 3 feet, 12 feet, 30 feet?
Oh, no, it's less than about 5 feet. It could almost be used as a fox antenna if you've got strong arms, sir.
Yeah, I think I know what it is. It's a three-element Yagi that's got a lot of issues with adjustability.
Yes, that describes it pretty much exactly.
And it's on VHF, I'm sure. Okay. Yeah, I'll be interested in the picture. No problem. Alrighty. Anybody else have any comments on it? Well, I've got some items here. I have a THF6 with the charger and a speaker mic for 2 1/4. And I have a a WIN radio receiver kit up to 3500 megahertz, plus the spectrum analyzer and usage monitoring software for a price that we can discuss. W2TTT. Our next topic Hector's question. Don, I'm going to ask you to handle the question because I have to take this phone call real quick. But Hector, over to you, and Don will host the response, W2TTT.
Hey, good evening, everybody, W2NPR. It's always good to have a backup host because one never knows. It's like a co-pilot. So, anyway, good evening all. Happy Thursday to all. Those of you who operate HF Mobile and use a multi-band antenna, or have had any experience with one, this is for you. I use an Outbacker antenna, which covers HF from 3 to 30 megahertz. For what it is, it works rather well on 75 meters. However, I have seen an article here and there regarding a monoband 75 meter antenna, and all of them I've seen have capacitance hats. And to not time out the repeater, my question is, could a capacitance hat be added to the top of the Outbacker? Now, if you want the model, the specific model number of what I have, it's an OB8HP, Oscar Bravo 8 High Power. There is a tuning stub at the top of the antenna, which is a mere 3.5 inches out of the top. The rest of the antenna is a solid fiberglass body in which you move the wire around from tap to change your band. I have it mounted on the front bumper of a full-size Ford van. If you've seen Gordon's van, that's in essence what I drive. And I was wondering if the capacitance hat on that antenna would allow the antenna to work better on 75 meters. Back to net, W2NCR.
This is W2JK. Anybody with any comments on that? Over. Okay, the only thing I can think of is if you had that on there, what's it going to do to your other bands? And that would be the other side of the coin. I know they have a mono band antenna for 75. Yeah, it's fine, but those antennas probably do not work. Maybe on like 20 meters or 10 to 15 meters that way. You might buy yourself more problems. I don't know. Of course, you do have taps on the outbacker, so you might get around it. But you have a thing of the mechanical part of it there too. Whether the fiberglass would be strong enough to have a small capacitance hat that. That's how it would be mounted. That would be the, I guess that's the question that you'd want to find out about. Back to you, Nestor, to JK.
Well, Don, I would only really use it on 75 meters, and I would take the hat off if I'm going to use it on 40 meters and above. I know 75 meters is very difficult to begin with to operate mobile. And, you know, when it works, it works. But where this came to mind was as I drive down the highway and I get under an overpass with exposed metal beams, certain stations will be incredibly louder for the 1 or 2 seconds that I'm under there, and then of course when I get back out in open air the signal goes down. So this would really just be for 75 meters, and you know, something that maybe would make it work better. The worst case scenario, if I absolutely had to, I would get a monoband 75-80 meter antenna with a capacitance hat, and you know, support it however I need, and you know, just go with that. So, but if I could add something to what I have just for that one band, then I would be okay. Over.
Yeah, we could always try putting something on there. Couple rods. I don't know just how big the capacitance hat would have to be. I guess anything you put up there would be a benefit. Just probably the best thing to do is somehow attach it to the fiberglass at the top, which has the strength, and then attach it electrically to that 3.5-inch stub that's sticking out there, and see how things work for you. Might be that you might have to play with some taps down at the bottom at the same time. Jim, K2ZO, do you have any thoughts on this W2JK?
Okay, W2JK, K2ZO. Well, if you look at the use of them in commercial service, a capacitive hat will allow you to shorten the antenna. A perfect example is it used to be WHN over there, or whatever. I forget what they are now. I think they were a Spanish station, but you know the one I'm talking about there off the parkway. Got those three big capacitive hats on it. Well, that antenna would need to be a lot longer, taller, to achieve resonance, so those capacitive hats knock it down. I don't make any difference as far as receiving goes, but you certainly could effectively try something and see what it would do. If you got an old broken umbrella, that'd be a perfect capacitive hat. Not that you would want to be driving around with it, but you might want to make a test with it. Pull off the shaft and then spread the arms out there and attach it to the top of the antenna where that little stinger threads in. Of course, you could always use a pizza pan too if you drilled a hole in it. But what normally it allows you to do, and people have done things like this to shorten antennas to preserve spaces by using a disc on the end of it. It just allows you to make the antenna shorter, which sometimes is a big advantage. And that's about all I can say. I don't think it's going to make a difference in as far as the way the radiation goes, although it may change the pattern a little bit. Back to that, K2ZO.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Yeah, well, that's true. That does make the antenna appear longer. As I said, you might have to adjust some taps at the bottom to compensate for that. And it might be that you, I don't know how many taps you have when you involve 75 meters or what part of the band. Of course, you have to realize that the antenna that long, it's a very narrow bandwidth before your SWR gets out of range, because the antenna itself is very narrow at that kind of thing. If you're an 8-foot antenna, it should be really something on the order of 60 feet long. So it's quite a short antenna. But in its range, it's probably very good. That's another thing. If you go further off your resonant frequency, the further off you get to the point where you get beyond, let's say, 3-1 SWR, well, first of all, your transmitter is going to say, I don't like that, and it starts to do its automatic shutdown kind of a thing. So that would reduce your signal, your transmitter signal. And also, you might have the same effect on the receiving, but to a point, not it will shut down, of course, because of not an SWR thing, but it's something you could try, and before you go spending a lot of money on another antenna, I'd say try a couple of these things that Jim recommended, the pizza pan and the umbrella, or just get some wire and hook it out there, make a loop of some copper wire or a halo or something, whatever comes to mind. Back to you, Mr. W2JK. I'm Hector Rather.
Okay. Pizza pan, plenty of those. Broken umbrellas, well, I think I have just the sacrificial lamb for that. So, we'll try one of them. as far as the band taps go, there's one tap per band. And yes, that antenna is very narrow banded. In fact, I can use the antenna on the lower portion of 80 meters if I remove the wire from the antenna completely. But once I add the that capacitive wire and plug into the 75-meter tap, that raises the frequency of the antenna slightly so that I can use it up around 3860. I run a tuner in the van anyway, so the SWR, I'm sure, is exponential without it. So at least on the lower frequencies, on 20 meters it's not bad. 10 meters, it's I get the most bandwidth out of 10 meters, of course, because the antenna is just about the right height for it. So that's the story. Well, I appreciate the info, and I will try a few things and try and make something up, a little halo right at the top there, and give it a test and see how it goes. Thank you all for your input, and this is W2NPR. We'll be listening for the remainder of the net. Back to net. Thanks, Don and Jim.
Okay, Hector. They're very good. Anybody else have any comments on this before we go on to any other subject? Okay, guess not. Okay, Gordon, W2TT, are you back? W2JEK.
Point, I'm going to ask, is there anybody else wishing to check into the Barotech there? Please come down with your call, whether you have a question, comment, or none.
This is NS2K, Jim, and I don't really have a question at this point, but I've been listening at least periodically running around the house.
Okay. Fun running around the house. Good evening. Anybody else wishing to check in? This is W2JEK acting net control. Okay, very good. Let's see if Gordon's back. W2TTT from W2JEK. W2JEK acting net control. Anybody else have any questions or comments or any information for the net? This is W2JEK, over.
KC2UNH.
Paul, KC2UNH, go ahead, over. This is W2JEK.
Hi, KTBAR, KT2UNH. I had a Windows question, if anyone can actually answer. I just started putting a laptop back together again. I had an old Dell laptop that I just wanted to put together to do some radio work on it. Had Windows XP, recovered it back to the recovery disk, which is probably circa 2007. Couldn't find a driver for the network card, which I sort of understood because I had issues with that previously. But my sort of I got it up in the network, went to Windows Update, having issues with Windows Update. I'm just wondering if anyone knows if Windows Update is pulling service. If Windows XP update is pulling services for older versions, back to that.
Okay, is anybody going to answer that question? Does anybody answer the question, please come now.
Gordon?
TTT, are you out there, Gordon? This is W2JEK, over. I really think Gordon is probably the one that might be able to answer that. I don't know much on that, much on computers myself. So, I don't know what to tell you. Myself. Anybody else have any thoughts on this before I go further on? Back, anybody else with some thoughts, please come down. the answer to this. I have Windows XP, and whether the whether it's, I don't know what the exact problem is. I think you have to ask somebody who is more knowledgeable than myself. Nobody here on the internet at the present time would be able to help. So maybe try again next week, or find somebody else, or get a hold of Gordon at some other time. I guess that would be the best way to do. Maybe give him an email. W2TTT, I think it's at ARRL.net is a way to get a hold of him. That might be the way to do it. So, back to you with KC2UNHW2JEK.
W2JEK, yeah, I'll hold it for next week. I had one more other question, just to keep the natural going. The reason I'm putting this computer together is to start playing about with its MT63 protocol for the Racing Net. And there was a lot of discussions on rig runners and various ways of tying the computer to the radio. And I had a sort of question about these cheap Chinese radios that have the Kenwood speaker and mic jack. And the question is how to actually make those, and do you actually need something like a rig runner to drop the output voltage of the speaker from the PC or the laptop, which is probably about 1 volt down to the couple of millivolts that would be needed for the mic?
Your radio only wants a couple of millivolts, and you got a good 15 volts coming out of the radio. Yes, I can understand you need some kind of a attenuator there. I know I'm not familiar with that particular thing, but I know the Radio Shack used to make a cord that if you were going to be recording when this was on portable cassette tape recorders. See what era I'm dealing with. They had a cord that was an attenuator so that you would plug you would play the cassette that you were dubbing. You'd plug it to that speaker jack on that cassette player, and that would go into the mic jack on the other cassette player that you're using to do the recording to knock the signal down. Like I said, with Billy, Phil, we need the same kind of a thing here, one way or the other, how the other they do it. I'm not too familiar with the rig runner myself, but maybe somebody else can handle that or answer the question better than I can. So I'll need to, if anybody else has any information, please come down. But, tying any radio to the computer, you have to you can't overdrive the radio, it will distort, and you can't overdrive the computer, it will distort, so you have to get the levels right. I know some of the work I did, we had a distortion problem in teletype circuitry and found out that somebody had cranked the levels up too high, and the carrier system that was on didn't like it and distorted the guy at the other end was getting garbage. So, back to you, Paul. W2JK.
Yeah, I think that's actually perfect. What I actually probably need is, going back to the old school, something like offset attenuation. I could just dial it down. My initial thought was the fact that if I, just dial the sine card back down, the actual amount of the signals coming out of the computer, but that allows way back on, and should be able to feed the mic pretty well. So yeah, that's something for me to look into. Thank you. Back to that.
Anybody else have anything for the net at this time? 72JK. Do we have any late check-ins? This is 72JK standing by.
W2JK, this is W2LCN. My name is Rick. Just a late check-in. I was listening in, but wasn't able to throw in any comments. I just kind of hanging back on the side. Back to you.
Okay, Rick, good evening, and thanks for coming in here, and to have you here and listening in. You might be able to help us, so that's why we ask everybody who's listening to let us know you're there. So, okay, last call for any check-ins or any comments or questions before we wrap this up. This is W2JK standing by.
REN, checking in, First Personals, Art.
Hey Art, W2REN, good evening and welcome to the net. Where are you located, sir?
I am indoors on a mobile unit with a homemade table at a copper in Sakasana.
Oh, very good. Yeah, well, your repeater that's up in Alpine. Do you have any questions or comments for the net? Over.
Negative. I was going around the band. I heard you guys were in a net there. I was on another net there over here in Parsippany area, if I may. And I was just QSYing around the channels, and I heard a bunch of intelligent people here, so I figured I'd join in. So there you have it, W2REN. Back to you.
JEK, I'm acting that control for the TechNet tonight. Very good, glad to have you. Anybody else for the net, comments, questions, or check-ins? We're standing by for before we wrap it up. Okay, good evening, everybody. And I'll say 73s to all, and 88 to the YLs, and next week we'll be on again at 9 p.m. at the same frequency. So this is W2 being net control and closing the TechNet 26th of October 2012, which is the GMT daytime time.
W2TTT timeout.
It's W2TTT. I apologize, gentlemen. I had a call with a major issue that I had to take care of. So everything is good. W2TTT.
One, which is, I believe, the 5000 series, you'd better be serious about it, because it ain't ever coming off.
Well, yeah, what I can do then is place it with one of the two that I have, and then what I can do underneath, where it's out of sight, I can go in and put a bead of that in for that exact purpose. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I got a kick. The whole discussion came up with people doing rail stanchions on a boat, and somebody was complaining that they used the strong stuff, and when they tried to remove it, it literally took the gel coat right off the hull. The gel coat gave before the adhesive did.
Outstanding. I like seeing that. That's great. Just what you want. No concerns about whether or not something's going to do the job. Let me think here. I'm looking at my schedule for tomorrow. I'm trying to decide how late I can stay up and still sound like a coherent person. Oh my. I have an 11, a 12, and a 2, and a 4. No, I don't have a 4. Oh, tomorrow is excellent. I got time to do all sorts of good stuff. Yay.
Okay. I assume these are all conference calls that you're talking about.
Well, they would, yeah. Yeah, I mean, one is a conference call at 11. A friend of mine's pitching pitching an idea for a proof of concept, and he's actually going to need my support, and I've actually done better than giving him my support. I found somebody who's done what he needs from me, so we're going to work together. He needs some environmental probes just to have. His whole project has nothing to do with the environment, okay? Or environmental monitoring or whatever. He needs just a few diverse data sources just to prove a point, and then he's building something. I don't want to go into it, but it's a very interesting convoluted database thingy and presentation mechanism. So that's what he's pitching, but he needs a diverse set of data. Some of them are temperature and humidity monitoring. So I found that available to him. And I found some other things from two sources, actually. And one was another prior proof of concept, and the other one was something done over in research to basically monitor the entire building as a living and breathing item. So, anyway, it's kind of fun. So, his project, I'm gonna be there to support it, and like that there. And, he wants to collaborate, blah blah blah. So I'm gonna help him out. And so I have to be there for that. Plus, people on the panel, I think I'm actually on the judging panel for it. So which is kind of incestuous, but it's okay. Everybody understands that going in. By the time they get to this phase of the pitching process, the answer is yes. We just cross the T's and dotting I's, you know.
Yes, it's nice when you get to, anyway. Yeah, how to find a properly separate panel to judge. Yeah, it almost never works. Anyway, no, very good. But I got, hopefully tomorrow isn't too bad. Got to finish up some drawings and stuff. But later on in the evening, I believe I'm going to get kidnapped down to do some work on the 2-7 machine.
So you're not going to be at the Fairlawn meeting tomorrow?
Depends on if they can do the job tomorrow night or not.
I see. Well, the 2-7 machine needs the work. What the heck? Get her done. I can understand that. Yeah, and regarding panels, yeah, that we have a mainstay group of folks, and they are very talented and very diverse. But what they've actually done now is that core part of the panel judges, or should we say, business value and future marketability and/or commercialization opportunities, whatever. When it comes to some of the inboard technology of some of these ideas that normally would not see the light of day, but for programs like the one we're talking about, those of us who have backgrounds in that or know who to ask, you know, aren't half the time the people we'd want to ask to be on the panel are the people proposing to do the work, and therein lies the problem. So. As long as the business side is shall we say, what I'll call clean, then I don't mind if the technical side is cross-contaminated, for lack of a better term. I mean, I've actually seen people during pitches had no idea what the subject was, and during the pitch, they said straight out, "Can I come play with you?" Yes, that kind of tipped the person's hand, huh?
Yeah, well, yes. No, but that's good. Yeah, generate interest from other directions. But so in this case, it's more of a peer review than a management review.
Yeah, it is. Although there's lots of different levels of management. I mean, some people walk in, "I'm just a blah, blah, blah." And I said, "No, you're a human being with a great idea, and we want to hear about it, so let's go." No problem. Anyway. So, before I start drilling holes in this NEMA 3 box here, 3R box, I'm going to mount things like rig runner and the stand-up chassis for the computer, and I'll probably replace the screws in the bottom of the flex and make it a and just get longer screws and you know, basically screw the rubber feet right through the box. But I was thinking the best way to deal with waterproofing the box at this point is probably just to shoot the holes with RTV and then RTV over the holes on the outside when I'm done. Yes, no, maybe.
Yeah, usually there's a nice way of doing it without making it all, you know, gunky looking. But, backfilling, or I'll put some on under the head, whatever. Whatever you got to do to guarantee watertight. Obviously, the fewer protrusions you have to make, the better. It'd be nice if you could fasten a boss or fastening plate on the inside. You know, get enough surface area so the adhesive is going to function correctly. And that's 2K.
You know, that's something I could do. I think I have an old computer chassis. I could just bolt everything to the chassis and then just glue do it with bolt heads with bolts up, if you will, and then that way not have to make any incursions in the box except for power and antennas and things like that.
Yeah, that where actual wires or something have to go through. That's obviously required ordinarily, unless you can put the antenna and everything on the inside. But, I've seen where people will go through and put a framework inside it and then maybe make it so that it's removable either for service or for operation, depending upon the nature of the project. But, you can make it so that once you put it in the box and close the cover, the whole thing is secure in place.
Yeah, you know what? Let me just... I'm pretty sure that the chassis I have will accommodate this footprint. It's almost as big as the box. And I can bolt these to the chassis of that, and as I said, leads up, and so I could then just spin nuts to secure things in place on that sub-chassis. And I could either just glue the sub-chassis in, and there's a ground pin in the corner, so either I can run a jumper to it, or I could bolt through bolt it to marry the inner plate with the with the box. Probably easy to do.
Yeah. Try to keep it as neat and clean as possible. Anyway, but it'll work. So you got some kind of a processor in there. You got the receiver. No, this is a receive-only project, and then sent off to the internet, as it were.
Yeah, I mean theoretically, you can we could remotely log in, operate the radio, which is, don't kid yourself, that capability will be in full effect at some point. But we basically want to use this as a propagation monitor.
Yeah, as long as you remember, propagation can work both ways.
Well, yeah, of course. In the corporate context, we don't have a license to transmit, so I'm not going to worry about that. I'll be able to take care of identification of signals and things like that. I already got that figured out. And mixing and matching and such. By the way, the other day I was looking at this Atom processor with the 130 gig solid-state drive on it, and it was sipping along at less than 400 mils. I had two of them at 600 mils, two of these boards at 600 mils. I mean, it was stupid as to how little power they were sucking.
Oh, very nice. No, they weren't actually having to do anything. That was basically idle current.
Processors were doing stuff. I had them do basic things like, disk accesses, computation things like that. I maybe got an average of, 70% CPU on all four processors, all four, processing threads.
Very good. It wasn't in a dead, near comatose state. But not good. So I got to go back here and do some more packing. You'd never know that I'd even started here.
Oh, packing as in to move, or packing because you're going on a trip?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. Well, I take it you're going to spend part of the season down in Florida and part of the season out west, yes?
Oh, one never knows. I'm not as highly programmed as Noel here on that matter. His plans are way too specific. In any case, no, in another couple of weeks I'll be taking a load of stuff. Arizona, so got to get things way more organized before I can do that.
You gonna do this like by renting a truck or something?
Yeah, I've got a truck coming. My brother will come down. We'll drive the thing out and then fly back.
Pull down. Outstanding. That's great. That's super. Well, I'll let you get back to your packing, sir. And yeah, I don't even know where Noel is right now. Is he out of town?
Oh, at the moment, I have no idea. But see, part of the trick is where he may actually be internet connected. You could be almost anywhere.
Oh yeah, I know. You're gonna laugh, but when I'm done with this project, I'll be able to put my signal on from, well, let's see, Connecticut, 2 points in New Jersey, San Ramon, California, the Dallas Metroplex somewhere, Atlanta Metro somewhere, and Chicago somewhere. So it's going to be interesting. But you know, let's put it this way: I'm not programming my call sign or anything because that's not what we're doing. But the Atom processor, despite what people were saying, if you don't ask it to do a whole lot else, it runs one receiver of a Flex 5000 fairly well. I mean, not perfectly, but fairly well. If you had to do it, it's no big deal. You could run a weekend, you'd survive. If you had to do ultra heavy duty logging and networking, God knows whatever else, and maybe that's a little much, but for this purpose, with a 1500, it's just fine. And that's your cable, because you can TTT.
And you're running a fairly low rate sample on that.
Well, yeah, I'm on two levels. One is looking at 48 kilohertz instead of 192 kilohertz. I have one receiver, not two, and I'm taking some amplitude samples. I'm shifting frequencies, settling in, taking some samples, recording them and moving on. I mean, you know, it's not rocket science.
Yeah, I understand. You're not pushing it all that hard. You start to add a whole bunch of other features, more DSP type stuff, and it gets way, way busier.
Right. And one of the thoughts we had, by the way, is to look at the idea of upgrading our development environments to have higher performing machines later on. So we might take what we start out as our development machines and essentially export them and go from there. Well, so we'll see. I you didn't hear this the other, but I had to send an antenna and mount and some coax, a power supply, to a colleague who got the other 1500. I delivered to him a ready-to-go Atom processor. All the Microsoft stuff was done. And then he I handed him the Flex in a box, a bunch of pre-made power cables, and power strip, and keyboard mount. And all he had to do was add the video display, and just cobble together for now on his workbench. But in time, that's going to be, you know, we'll get his all chassised up too. I'm just trying to. I know I need one outside case version, and that's what's sitting on my desk right now. And the other one that's sitting on my desk is going to go in a Pelican case. But I think, and I don't know if you've looked at it. Have you looked at the Seahorse cases? I hear that they're just about as good as Harding and Pelican, and apparently they have molded into their plastic the shoulder for the for like a panel on both the lid and on the main base. Have you seen those?
Seahorse I'm not familiar with, but I have seen some others with, you know, internal mounts for things that were probably customs for some project. But anyway.
Anyway, so I'm going to go look at a Seahorse case tomorrow just to see qualitatively whether they meet our needs. If it does, then I may order one of those as well, but probably on the larger size. So I probably want to be able to use this for a bunch of different projects. But anyway, upshot is that this young man on our staff is not a ham, and he calls me up today. He goes, "Hey, Gord," he says, "listen, I'm going to be renting the back part of my house to somebody, and I won't be able to run a cable out that window anymore. What are we going to do?" And I said, "Never fear. I had ordered you a 50-foot extension to the antenna that I ordered for you and the barrel connector to tag them together. All you need is some good electrical tape." And he goes, "Oh, man, I can handle that." He says, "Man, you thought of everything." I said, "I've done it. Today my first rodeo, son." He laughed. Well, to get this guy to have a hand license before he's all done, you know.
Yeah, I really have to work on that as a perhaps somewhat separate issue. Anyway, I just brought up the Seahorse website here. It looks rather pelican-y, but, yeah, they're probably fine.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought. By the way, I don't know if you're aware, but we have a local source of this stuff. We have two. We have cases by source on Island Road in Mawa, and I forget the name of the other place, in Patterson. And both are very, very good. In fact, I think the one in Patterson is a Seahorse stocking location for a lot of their products.
Oh, very good.
I mean, the stuff ain't cheap. I did notice, by the way, that the Seahorse stuff is less expensive. So than Pelican Harding. Pelican Harding is very expensive.